Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live from the traveling Built Ford Tough studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the fans, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network and wherever you are in the free Odyssey app. Good Thursday morning. We are live from the Quest Diagnostics Giants training facility. It's a Giants training camp day. It is also MLB trade deadline day, 6 p.m., as we got a flurry of deals yesterday. The Yankees, the Mets, and the Phillies very active. And the Mets right now have a back end of a bullpen on paper that's one of the best they have had in recent memory. A really bad series for them out in San Diego. But I think everybody's looking ahead right now what they're going to do. In addition to the bullpen moves they made yesterday, Yankees with an incredible comeback victory after almost blowing a game that would have been really everything that's been wrong with the Yankees wrapped into one, but they figure out a way to win that. And of course, we have a big show here from the Giants facility. I mentioned yesterday we got a great guest list. I'll give it to you again. Jameis Winston coming up first, 6:15, Russell Wilson, 6:45. Dexter Lawrence, 7:15, Brian Daboll, 7:30, Javon Holland, 8:15. So pretty cool. We extended our deal with the Giants. We are partners for even more years. We're happy to be here this morning. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, G. I'm doing great. And we were talking about this yesterday in regards to the Mets and the Yankees, what they were going to do, how they're going to try to basically bolster their roster and kind of redo part of it, at least a third of it. And I would think that the Yankees and the Mets are not done yet. I mean, they're still out there. They're still trying to cull and find players. I do think that Brian Cashman is very aware of the money. You know, I kind of feel like the guys that they've added, they're not that expensive. They're guys that hopefully he can find a little bit of a diamond in a rough. This latest guy, you know, supposedly hits left-handed pitching great, and maybe he'll be a platoon, or maybe he'll be out in right field for Aaron Judge. He's actually a pretty good defensive player. The Mets, as you just said, the bullpen is going to be refortified, and certainly when you look at it on paper, it is pretty impressive. But the Phillies didn't sit stand pat either. You know what I mean? I mean, they went out and bolstered their bullpen. They get a flame-throwing reliever. So I don't know. I just feel like the Mets are not done yet. So I think we're going to go over 2.5 players for the Mets, since they had already added one player, Soto. So we were questioning whether or not they would add three or more players. And I do think they're going to add somebody else. And the Yankees, I'm not really sure, what they're thinking about right now. I can't believe that this would be the only moves that they would make. I would think that they would maybe add another player or two. And depending on who's available out there and for bullpen help, because certainly they need that. And I think both the Mets and the Yankees would also like another legitimate starter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the Mets are looking right now, is do they upgrade in center field and do they add a starting pitcher today? Because they're not going to add another reliever after what they did yesterday. And I think the Yankees were kind of left holding the bag. I'm sure they were involved on all these guys. I'm sure they were involved on Duran. I'm sure they were involved on Tyler Rogers. And Helsley, and the Mets and the Phillies just gave more, especially, the Tyler Rogers deal. Those are three guys that we have seen that the Mets have traded back to San Francisco in that deal. So the Yankees are going to have to fortify the bullpen for sure. And now we're going to see, how far David Stearns goes. I mean, he traded away a bunch of prospects yesterday. How many more? And do some of those big names we were talking about come off the board now? The Acuñas and the Beatties and the Vientos and the Mauricio and stuff like that. How much all in? There's all in, and then there's
I mean, they still have a logjam at third base, and they still need some sort of situational. I mean, to fix the situation in center field to get a little bit more offense in the outfield. To me, and I think we talked about this yesterday, it's been written all over the place. So a lot of people think that Stephen Kwan from the Guardians is a guy that is out there that people are bidding for. And I believe that if the Mets got him, you know, stick him in left field, put Brandon Nimmo in center, I could live with that, and put Kwan at the top of the lineup. Now, all of a sudden, you've extended this lineup a little bit more. You get Jeff McNeil back at second base, Brandon Nimmo out in center field, although it's not perfect. But you now have a leadoff hitter that is really a contact hitter that can be a guy that could set the problem with the Mets is they don't have a problem setting the table. They have a problem clearing the table.
Yeah.
But I just do think another solid outfielder and a solid offensive player that does put the ball in play makes a lot of sense to me. And I can work around, you know, who's going to play center field. And I know it's not perfect, but I do think that it makes you better offensively. I also think that it puts people in the right spot, maybe with the exception of Brandon Nimmo in center field, who's played center field before. I mean, it's not like he's not played out there.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like the less running I can have Brandon Nimmo do, the better, especially with some of the lower leg injuries, the lower body injuries that he's had over his career. But it's not the worst situation at all. And to me, it's you know, Clay Holmes was not good again yesterday. That's an issue. I do still believe in the starting pitching when healthy. They need one more big bat. They just need it because you see yesterday, and I know Yu Darvish turns into the greatest pitcher who's ever walked the earth when he faces whatever Mets lineup is out there. But when you've got Lindor struggling, Alonso struggling, and Soto out of the lineup, I mean, obviously they got no shot.
Well,
You
can say the same thing about the Yankees. You know, if you have
but they've won 3 out of 4 without Judge there. They figured it out somehow. But that's one player. As we're talking about two guys who were just been awful offensively in Lindor and Alonso for an extended period of time. I mean, even through the winning streak, and Soto, who hopefully will be back sooner than later.
Well, just know that last year they all had their moments and. It's now, this is where the season, by the way, this is where the season really begins.
Rubber meets the road.
Metal meets the meat.
Yep.
You know, so this is where we go. This is where it all starts now. This is August and September after the trade deadline and trying to figure out what your lineup and what your roster is going to look like, who's healthy, who's coming back. And I kind of feel like both teams are on the trending on the way back with injured players. But I don't believe they're done yet. And we talked about this yesterday after we get off the air. Right after we get off the air, the Mets announcement comes.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
So 10 a.m. today, expect a deal. I'm sure Evan's going to be going crazy. I did see him yesterday when I was leaving and he was coming in.
And what was that like?
It's just frenetic energy is really what it is. You know, he's wheeling around a suitcase for whatever reason. I have no idea why. Wheeling around a suitcase.
I mean, does he keep his like aluminum cans and bottles in there?
I'm a loser.
So we could get this 5 cents or 10 cents.
Yes, yeah,
maybe
exactly.
That's what it was. Yeah, a big shopping cart filled with cans and bottles.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then he was talking about how it's going to be tough for him because he has these memories of the 2015 trade deadline where him and Joe were doing a camp show and Cespedes got traded to the Mets and they didn't know what to do. And I was like, Evan, you're going to be okay, man. Like, it's all right. No matter what happens, you're going to be okay.
I mean, interviewing
a Giant. You'll be talking about the trade deadline. You know, it's a good problem to have all this stuff going on right now. And having two baseball teams that are active and trying to win, which is something we haven't gotten from these football teams in the last number of years.
Hopefully that's going to change for both of them. And there's a level of excitement over here with a number of their rookies that they've drafted. And, of course, Jackson Dart is at the top of that list, along with Abdul Carter and Cam Scadaboo. So, you know, it is every year you start spring training and or summer training camp, I should say, and you have a false sense of hope, I think sometimes you would call it. But, you know, there are new personalities here. I think Brian Daboll, we'll have Brian on a little bit later on. I'm sure he knows what the realities of this business are. I mean, you know, he's not going to hide anything. He knows what he has to do. Their offense is just, if they can get their offense somewhere around the middle of the league as opposed to the bottom of the league and with an improved defense, maybe they'll be one of the teams that actually can surprise people, especially if Russell Wilson doesn't turn the ball over early in the season and give games away the way that the Giants have given games away over the last 3 years.
And speaking of Russell Wilson, he is scheduled to appear with us about 35 minutes from now. And about 5 minutes from now, Jameis Winston is scheduled to appear. So we're going to take an early break.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network, live from Giants camp, from the traveling Built Ford Tough studio. You are hearing to the... listening to the beautiful voice of the man who is sitting next to me. That is quarterback Jameis Winston, who showed up this morning with no shoes, bare feet. Are you a grounding guy, Jameis?
Good morning. I'm a big grounding guy.
Big grounding guy.
And that's actually my jazz tunes.
That's your jazz tunes, yes.
That's the New Orleans in me.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's like Preservation Hall, that type of stuff. I mean, it's deep down in there. But yeah, so the grounding, tell me about it. You like to have your feet on the grass and feet on the concrete and feel that stuff to get in the mood? Like, what is it about?
Yeah, it just eliminates information and just allows you to be connected with the earth.
Eliminates information and allows you to be connected. Well, that's good. It's a good thing. Yeah, I guess.
Inflammation.
Oh, inflammation.
Yeah. Oh.
I thought you said information.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say
The southern accent. I know sometimes. Yeah.
Well, we have an accent up here too, by the way. You know, so Gio here, my partner, was like so hoping that you were going to sign with the Giants.
Yeah.
Because you are the perfect personality for a team that has lacked major personality here. How has your experience been so far?
Well, I'm happy and grateful to be here. The quarterback room is amazing. Obviously, it's the greatest city in the world. But being in Jersey, getting acclimated to the Jersey culture is amazing as well. Just such great people and very open-minded people and straight to the point. So I really like that because there's no small conversations. They're going to tell you what they got to say, and then you go on from there.
All right, so when you say Jersey culture, what are the things that pop into your mind since you've been here about the New Jersey, New York culture?
One thing in particular is just they're straight to the point.
Yeah.
In the South, you know, sometimes we can be a little bit more lenient in our opinions, but a lot of Jerseyans, they tell you what's on their heart, and I really respect that and admire that. Obviously, the Italian culture, the Tommy DeVito's and everyone. I mean, not being familiar with Jersey, I only experienced Jersey Shore, like from a perception of
watching
TV.
You like that show?
You know, I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that was only, you know, the only thing I saw about Jersey.
Right.
But we're in North Jersey, so it's
so. So you're a big Snooki fan? Is that what you're telling us?
I forget the characters. I remember Polly D. I think Snooki was. I forget who she was.
Yeah, Jim Tan Laundry, GTL. That's a big thing around here.
Smooth.
So let me ask you. So you're now in your third spot, third different offensive system. I always tell Gio just how hard it is, no matter how old you are, to adapt to your new team, your new way of doing things, the way that they call plays, the way they call formations, things of that nature. How's that going for you?
Yeah, it's been pretty well. I think this offense is very challenging, but fortunately I was able to get some of it in Cleveland last year with Ken Dorsey and Coach Dabble having like that relationship in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So I know some of the concepts, just the verbiage. The verbiage is always the big thing in terms of communicating to guys, especially guys when you're in there with guys that don't necessarily know all the time. You got to be able to be clear and communicate effectively to those guys.
I always tell these guys that it's not easy, especially when the bullets start flying for real. Mm-hmm. When you're out on the field, the anxiety is high, and you're counting on people to be in one place, but they may not be in that place.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of indecision. It's not like when you were in New Orleans, you were playing, and you kind of knew what everybody was doing. You knew where the offense was headed, and you kind of felt comfortable. But now, all of a sudden, even for an older player, you're 30, right?
Yeah, 31.
31, okay. So you still have a lot of football left in you.
Yeah.
I mean, but the point being is that you have to relearn every single year, not only just an offense, it's also the players that you're playing with.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about being a leader and being a quarterback in football is just being able to take what's going on in the classroom and apply it over to the field. And as you see, when the bullets get going and everybody have to start executing at a high level, it really challenges, like, your studying habits and what are you doing to prepare, right? If you're not going out out there with a plan and having your, you know, having your matchup that you really got preconceived in your mind, then you are already behind the eight ball.
You are behind the eight ball. Now, I heard you give an interview the other day. You do know the difference between Idaho and Utah, right?
I do.
Yeah, okay, good. Because you were talking about Taysom Hill and then Jackson Dart coming onto the field and actually throwing a touchdown pass that probably should have been yours.
Yeah, well,
that's the politics of the position.
Sure. What I was saying was Taysom Hill spent a lot of great time. Like, he's an Idaho legend and he's also a Utah legend.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
To BYU. So yes. I was saying I'm used to quarterbacks from Utah. Like, and I just gave him that Utah stigma because he went to BYU.
Yeah.
And coming in and taking all my touchdown fame. But no, it's a blessing to see, because we were all young quarterbacks and we saw like those reps are required, you know, especially in the red zone. And Coach Daboll does a great job of putting us in high intensity chaos situations, because in those situations you have to be able to react. You not really react, you have to be able to respond the right way and still be poised and go out there and execute.
Talking to Jameis Winston live from Giants training camp on Boomer and Geo. Do you remember your first college start at Florida State?
I do remember that, yes.
Do you remember where it was?
It was in Pittsburgh in Heinz Field at that time.
That's right. So I was working as the Pitt football sideline reporter for that game. It was Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. It was your first start ever. And on the sideline, you zip this pass like on a line, like 25-yard out to Kelvin Benjamin. And I was like, this guy's this is the real deal here, because we'd never seen you play at that point. Mm-hmm. And I remember that, and throughout your whole career, just like the arm strength and the I don't want to say reckless, because that's not fair, but just like aggressiveness. I'm going to throw this damn ball, and I'm just like, I want to make something happen. And I've always appreciated that about you. But like, how do you balance that? Because the famous line, I want God to deliver me from pick sixes. Like, how do you balance that aggressiveness now at this point in your career with trying not to make that big mistake?
Yeah, just focusing on decisions. Yeah. When you go out there and you accumulate, when you're looking at the course of a game, when you are 100% in decisions, then sometimes the turnovers are not there, and not focusing on the outcome. And it's funny that you say aggressive and reckless, because those are one of our terms in our quarterback room. Be aggressive, not reckless. And obviously, I like to take shots. I like to give guys an opportunity with the football. And this comes with the territory. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's about finding a way to win the football game. And when you win football games, none of the other stuff matters in a way.
You know, a friend of mine used to say, it's better to say whoa than sick'em, meaning that I'd rather you go full balls to the wall and then have to bring you back, as opposed to, come on, throw the ball. Don't be scared. You've never been scared to throw the ball.
Well, no, one of the most beautiful things about offense is that we know what we're doing. And I trust that I put enough preparation. I invest enough time in the guys that when I say, hey, it's third and seven. Hey, I'm coming to you. I know they're going to be in one robber. They're going to have outside leverage. I want you to attack his outside shoulder, break in, and give me leverage. And I'm going to put it on your bottom and protect you from the robber. But when you straight stem it, and then you run in, I got my mind made up. Now I got to get off, and who knows what happened. You got Myles Garrett coming from the left side, and you got to avoid that tackle. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, man, like, where are we here? But it's being able to make those decisions. I was talking to Bill Belichick, and I asked him, you know, like, what was so great about Tom Brady? He just talked about he eliminated negative plays. And through the course of the game, if you're able to eliminate the negative plays, and it's going to be times where the play caller is right, and you know, and you're right on money and everything is perfect, but those times when everything is not perfect, you get a different look that you get that unscouted look that you've seen, is being able to just, hey, scratch that play and go on to the next play.
You know, he was also incredibly accurate, threw it away from the defender and his wide receivers or tight end in the case of Gronk or Randy Moss would go and get the football. And I'm just wondering, like, you see Malik Nabers out here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been around a lot of great wide receivers. Give me your impressions of him on the field now that you've been out there with him a few days, and the fact that everybody believes that he could be a top three receiver in this league. Is that true?
He's definitely capable of being the number one receiver in this league.
Wow.
Just because his physical prowess, like when you be around him, like he's thick, like he is muscular, like, and the way that he moves is like he moves in a fluid motion, but he has the explosion to like go three more gears to track the ball, and he has strong hands and has the ability to separate. And I think in this league, when you're separating and you have 3 yards of separation on every reception, you know you're special, because that the area of separation is so like minimal. Like sometimes you get it an inch, but he's consistently getting 3 yards of separation. So it allows you just throw it to the back of his head and he's going
to
receive it.
Which is great because, you know, I was talking to Torrey Holt a couple days ago, who during his time with the Rams was one of the great route runners. Then comes Davante Adams, who is also known as a great route runner. And what does that mean about Malik Nabers? Is he that kind of player, or is he a little bit more like freelance?
Yeah, he's definitely that kind of player in terms of being specific with his route depth and how he gets open. But I think one of the most unique things that I've admired about him is just being sitting in the quarterback room and him just busting in the door, sitting in on our meetings, getting our perspective, learning how we want things ran, and even questioning us like, hey, how do you want this to look? Like, do you want me to square in on this end cut, or do you just want me to roll in there? And being able, like, hey, man, if I see cover two, I might take my time. Like, he's explaining these type of things to us. And as a young guy, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, man, who your wide receiver coach is? I said, who you getting coached by, man? Yeah. Because for you to have that type of football IQ as this being your second year in the league, I see why he has such great successes for sure.
All right, let's talk about this real quickly, Gio. You know, you talk about your quarterback room. You love your quarterback room. You got your Tommy DeVito in there. You got your young kid, Jackson Dart, your young kid once, where you're trying to learn and everything's coming at you 100 miles an hour. But you also have a Super Bowl-winning quarterback in Russell Wilson. And, you know, he's been deemed the starter going into the season. I know you have a lot of pride. I know you want to play. How are you dealing with the aspect of knowing that he's going to be the starter? There is a future quarterback here in Jackson Dart. Where do you fit into this whole thing?
Well, one of the beautiful things about being in that position is, one, you get to learn from the Super Bowl-winning quarterback and just seeing his approach and how he plans every single day. But my main approach is to be a servant leadership, like servant leader in terms of serve those men in that room and prepare myself. Like, because in training camp, like, it's to each his own. You know, every rep that you get, it counts. And I'm focusing on capitalizing and dominating those reps.
And last one for you, because I know you have to take off. We're actually going to talk to Russ coming up next. But I've always admired that about you. Number one overall pick. I mean, everything was, you were the guy for many years. And no matter what situation you found yourself in after that, you're there on the sideline, the best teammate, picking everybody up, slapping the hands. There's been a lot of guys who've been in your position, maybe been a backup in a spot where they thought they could have been starting, who would be sulking.
Could be a shift spot.
Right, exactly. Trying to get the other guy out of there. All you do is support your guys. I mean, at least from the outside looking in, I feel like you're genuine about it. I mean, that had to be hard at some point for you to, like, flip that switch and be like, I'm here for the team and not for me.
No, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to do what I love. And I love playing football. I love talking football. I love being around my teammates. Like, this culture is a culture that you don't really get to experience. And when you hear wiser players like Boomer and stuff, what do they miss? They miss this team concept. They miss this atmosphere. And that's one thing that I admire, and that's one thing I love, and I take pride in serving my teammates and lean from that way.
Hey, did you enjoy, I saw you in the offseason doing a lot of interviews. Yeah. I mean, like, this is going to be your future, isn't it? I mean, you're going to be in TV somewhere, podcasting. But, man, not yet. I mean, give it a few more years,
man. Please. My future, like, I you've been in multiple Super Bowls, and I want to feel that, man. I want to get in the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, and have that just be another thing that's on that accolade with this job.
Yeah, but you're good at the other side of it.
Yeah,
too,
I'm grateful. Like, but I like in the words of Beyonce, I woke up like this. Like this is what I love to do. I love to talk ball, man. But but my job, I'm required to reach the level that the greats reach, and that's win the Super Bowl.
Jameis, love having you here in New York, New Jersey, and it was a pleasure meeting you and talking to you today.
I appreciate you, Gio.
Jameis Winston, New York Giants quarterback.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo live from Giants training camp.
the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. Just had Jameis Winston on. We're going to have Russell Wilson coming up next. As we wait for Russ to join us, we're going to hear from Jerry Recco. Jerry, what's happening, man?
All right, guys. Good morning. We're brought to you by Sansone Auto Mall, Woodbridge, New Jersey. We will start with your the Yankees last night. They were taking on the Rays, and for a lot of this game, it was kind of a bore fest. It was a 1-0 game, not much happening. And then all of a sudden, in the late innings, things really started to pick up. And we talk, you talk about the them not being fundamentally sound,
yes,
sometimes, the Yankees.
And they forget how many outs there are in an inning. That's
it.
Not good either.
Play it.
First pitch from Fairbanks shows bunt. Lays down a third baseline. That should work. Caballero throws. Dug out. And he is out, but they get the runner to second. What happened here?
What?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Wells, I don't know what he was thinking. He must have thought that was the third out. Holy mackerel. He started walking back to first. Tampa Bay turned around and said they had a gimme. Oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe I just saw that.
Dave, what was that?
All right, you know, the interesting thing is that I appreciate it. I didn't hear Dave saying,
because
I didn't hear his call. I heard Michael Kay's call, and
sure,
yes, Michael roasted him. I mean, roasted him.
Tough thing to forget.
Inexcusable, yeah.
Especially in a tight game.
So what were Wells' comments after the game?
Yeah, that's tough when that happens.
Yeah.
I don't have Austin Wells on audio.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if somebody asked him or not.
I'm sure they did.
Remote, so it's a little bit more difficult to get some of that stuff.
My guess would be he's going to say, I forgot that there were.
You got to own it, right?
Out and say, yeah, I suppose so. So he thought the inning was over. It wasn't. The game did go on, and ultimately the Yankees did win.
I think Al did this to one of our softball games.
Where he walked off?
I'm like, what the F are you doing?
Well, he walked off with the shin.
Well, no, he never got up with the shin.
Two outs. Maybe. I don't remember that. You might be right, though. By the way, G, when you heard that call, does anything stand out or stick out, make you think of something else?
Oh, my goodness.
No, that would be a good one. When he says, what happened here?
Oh, well, yeah.
Minko.
What happened here?
Yes.
When he was choking on the peanut?
Correct.
Yeah. What happened here?
During the Richard Neer segment or show. Anyhow, they do win. Here's the game-winning call.
Here's the 0-1. Drawn an infield. Fly ball center field. This will do it. Jazz tags. It's well over the head of the center fielder. Jazz walks home. Yankees win.
Yeah, 5-4 the final. Dave Sims, Susan on both calls. 5-4 in 11. And by the way, Cody Bellinger, the game-tying RBI triple in the 10th. Yes, Stanton did strike out after that. I get that. And Anthony Volpe, who...
All he had to do is hit a fly ball.
I understand. He struck out.
He's chasing those balls out of the strike zone. That's when he's not right.
But he has performed well.
I know. He's been fine. He had a chance to end it right there.
And how about Anthony Volpe? Another throw in the dirt. Again,
this is an error of day.
I agree, but... His first baseman's got to help him a little bit.
Yeah,
that play has to be made. You're not wrong.
He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt anymore, man.
I agree. But for God's sakes.
Sometimes
you got hair in
sort of hair.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Rice last night? Can someone scoop a short hop?
Well, I mean, they don't have a first baseman playing first base.
I understand, but come on. Anyhow, he did hit a home run, though, too. And another thing in this game, Devin Williams allowed a two-run homer. That wasn't good. But they did win the game.
Yankee fans have got to remember one thing about Anthony Volpe, and I know it doesn't mean anything because it all comes really down to performance.
Sure.
But, you know, reading an in-depth article on him from when he first came up, I'm like, this kid is one of you, folks. He is one of you. He is passionate about the team he plays for, and he is one of us, meaning a tri-state area resident. And they're not doing anything at shortstop. They're not. He's not going anywhere. Maybe they give him a break here or there, which I would do. But
at least not this year.
Yeah, I know, but he's going to be your guy. He's going to be your guy. This is a kid you don't boo.
I hear you.
You don't boo a kid like this because he's not making $25 million a year. He's not loafing it down the first base when he hits the ball into the infield.
And he's starting to hit.
Right. And he's hitting home runs.
Yeah. So and a big one last night in the ninth inning.
Just remind people that he's one of you guys.
Hey, Fleegs, you can pop on here. I see you texting me that you found a Wells clip. Do you have it ready or should we do it next time?
I have it ready.
All right. So here you go, Boomer. Here's Austin Wells.
You thought Trent
has bunted
in
the
two
outs?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I can't hear anything.
So I thought it was like, ballsy play. I liked it. And then when he got out and I saw people kind of running towards their dugout, I was like, all right.
So did they DQ at all, do you think?
No, I mean, I think I just was being an idiot. So
All right.
He took ownership of it. You know what? That's better than I thought he was going to sound
yeah.
like. So I was being an idiot, which is great.
He made a mistake, pretty much.
And he's been a revelation of some sorts, you know, especially we forget the beginning of the year when he was hitting all those home runs.
Sure. Also threw a couple guys out last night.
He made a bad error, mental error. And that's what drives Yankee fans crazy, because whether it be the physical errors, but the mental errors, the lack of hustle. And unfortunately, that always goes back to the manager.
Very true. All right, here's one from Cody Bellinger on the game-tying triple.
Obviously, kind of hustling out of the box there. Obviously, knew I had a chance to split the gap. And, you know, obviously, once I saw it get past him, I was ready to go for three right away.
Amazing how good this guy's been. Anyway, the Yankees are 59-49. Rami, I'm going to forget the Jason Dominguez one this time. They did acquire White Sox outfielder Austin Slater. We'll see what else they do. They got the
left-handed. He hits left.
He's a masher.
I've read that.
He's a masher.
Now, who puts that out there?
I have no idea, but that's what I read. Well, so
he's got five home runs.
Right. So when I saw the headline Yankees acquire masher, I'm like, oh, they got Suarez. I'm like reading. I'm like, huh? Okay. Austin Slater.
Yeah, what? Who?
Sounds good.
I mean, this is what Brian Cashman does.
He's not done yet. He's got till 6 o'clock
tonight. He's on the fringes.
Very true.
Brian Cashman sucks.
The Mets acquired Ryan Helsley from the Cardinals for three prospects. One being Jesus Baez, who I believe, if I saw the article right,
Javier Baez's son.
Was pulled off of the bases last night in Brooklyn. Like, he was on second base, and they pulled him out of the game because he got traded. And then they also acquired Tyler Rogers from the Giants. Buto. Remember Frank the Tank called him Butto?
Yeah.
Butto's
yeah,
in San Francisco.
Butto's outo.
This guy Rogers had been with the Giants for like 7 years. And I was reading the Giant fan reaction about losing him and how much they're going to miss him and how much they appreciated everything he did. So hopefully he brings a little bit of that with him.
Supposed to be pretty good.
Low slot guy.
Yeah, yes. Low slot guy.
A little low slot guy. Little submariner.
They said his sinker tops out at 82.
Yeah, he doesn't throw fast at all, but he gets guys the ground out and he gets them to get out.
That's it. Now, they gave up, along with Buto, they gave up Blade Tidwell. He made some starts earlier this season. And Drew Gilbert was a highly thought of outfielder.
Are these the guys that Gary was talking about yesterday during the game about, you know, that's a lot to give up?
I suppose.
Well, he did say that during the game. I know he said.
Here comes Russ, by the way.
That's a lot to give up.
Yeah, well, because Gilbert, I believe, was highly thought of in their farm system, and Tidwell did make starts this year, and Buto. So
okay,
it's a lot to give up for a reliever, but they're being aggressive. They did, by the way, because Russ is here. Mets did get shut out by the Padres, 5-0, swept in three straight. So that's not great. But the Phillies lost to the White Sox.
All right.
The White Sox stink.
Russ, how's it going, man? Pleasure to
hey,
meet
Russ,
you.
How are you? Wilson is here. It's great to see you again, man.
We are
good. Good.
We are
Jerry,
live.
How
on
you doing?
Air. Yeah. This is man. You smell great.
He does smell good. that smells very good.
Very good smelling man right there. I have to tell you. Russell Wilson is with us, and man, I tell you, there was a lot of rumors years back about you being a New York Giant. Didn't happen a few years ago. It is now. Yeah. Tell me about your journey to being the Giants starting quarterback here in 2025.
Well, I'm excited, obviously, to be here. Obviously, I think we have a really good team that can do some things. We've got a lot of talent. But we got to take that talent and get wins. And I think the best thing about it is, you know, having a guy like Malik Nabers, what he can do on the outside. I think Wandell Robinson, and when I was putting on the film, watching him play football, I played with a guy who was small like him in terms of height, in Tyler Lockett. Yeah. He reminds me a lot of him, his ability. He's tough as nails, can make all the plays. I think this defensive line is special. And so just to be here and to really just kind of re-energize this football team, I'm excited about the opportunity there.
You know, it's interesting, Russell. I was asking Jameis because he's in his third system in 3 years. You're in, I think, your fourth system in 4 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
But you had two systems in Denver. You had the system in Seattle. You had last year. So this is actually your fifth system. You were last year in Pittsburgh. Is this, like, foreign to you, or is this something that you were familiar with?
You know, it's all ball. You know, I think that the best part about it is my obsession with football. I think, you know, the good thing is in Seattle for so many years, I was in West Coast style of offense. Mm-hmm. You know, Coach Darrell Bevell was my offensive coordinator for many of those years. And then I had, you know, Schottenheimer. And most of that offense was, I would say, 70% what I'd done before, a little bit additional. And then, you know, I've been in West Coast for most of my career. Sean Payton, obviously, was West Coast. And so I think the cool part about this offense is that the versatility that we have at the line of scrimmage, all the different things that we can do, the ability to run the football and what, you know, those personnels and what we can get to, it's exciting. So I'm excited to be under Coach Daboll and Coach Kafka.
Do you watch the quarterback documentary on Netflix? Have you seen any of that?
I haven't had the chance to watch it yet.
All right.
I hear it's pretty good, though.
Yeah, it's great. And one of the reasons I bring it up is because Kirk Cousins is lamenting the fact that he goes from Minnesota, where they're pretty stagnant on their offensive formations, and he could read the defense. And a lot of quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers don't like a lot of movement before the pre-snap and everything. They want to lock in and they want to see it all.
Yeah.
And he is just talking, Kirk Cousins is talking about, man, we got like 48 or 45 different ways to move people or shift, and we're always doing all these different things. And he really struggled down in Atlanta last year, to the point where he actually called Raheem Morris, his head coach, and said, "Hey, Rob, man, I'm not playing well. I don't know what's going on here," as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah.
I always talk about the struggle of learning, just not only learning players, and I know you like your players here, but just in your brain being able to speak freely and give coaching points in the middle of a game in the heat of battle.
Yeah, I don't feel like I struggle with that. I think the part for me is, I don't mind the motions and shifts. I've been, playing old school going back to college. I was at Wisconsin. We shifted everybody. Mm-hmm. It was power and it was play action, deep shots. Also at the same time, right before that, NC State, I was with Dana Bible and playing. West Coast offense.
Dana Bible was a quarterback coach for me way back in the day.
I know. Yeah. Hey, what you doing? I remember that.
Like, shut up.
But we used to talk about you, Boomer. Back
oh, you did.
That.
Okay, yeah. Great.
But what was awesome is that, for me, I've been in, I don't mind the versatility of it all. I think what's important is the manipulation of the defense. How do you get to it? How do you get to your one-on-one matchups? How do you find, how to move guys? How do you get guys wide open? All of that. And then also, too, how do you open up run lanes? I think all of that shift in motioning is fine with me. It doesn't affect me necessarily in terms of seeing the defense. And, I think the thing is, playing quarterback, it's all process elimination. How fast can you read it? How fast can you see it? How fast can you see, okay, this is going to be either a three match coverage, or it's going to end up getting a six. And having that process elimination fast, and I think that's where the film study comes in.
Talking to Russell Wilson here at Giants camp, and I spent some years in Pittsburgh. You were there last year, and I saw you get fully immersed in the community there.
Yeah.
And you come here, and you're fully immersed here. And I think that's great. Why is it so important to you to not just be the starting quarterback for a particular team, but also represent the community in the city that you're in?
I think it goes back to really just kind of my experience growing up. I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, 1988, when you won the MVP.
Yes,
I was 88, baby.
Pointing out how old I am.
But, I grew up with not much. I saw my parents work their butts off every day just to be able to get me to, to school, to get me to baseball, to get me to football. Watching my mom be an ER nurse and my dad, unfortunately, be in hospitals. So that meant a lot to me, and I lost my dad in hospital. And so when I went to Seattle, the first day I got there, I called the hospital. I said, "Hey, can I come to Children's Hospital?" They're like, "Yeah, we don't even know who you are, but sure." And I started making that a habit every Tuesday, because I felt like much is given, much is required, and it was a responsibility for me to be able to give back. And so that was really why I started doing the stuff in the community in Seattle in such a way that I felt like there's an opportunity to give back and give a little hope. And with our foundation, One at U Foundation, that's meant a lot to me over the years. And so I've been fortunate to be able to be able to impact different cities and different locations. I think here in New York, obviously, there's so many young kids that you can impact and give a little hope to. It's always cool coming here to practice, and during practice, and after practice, you get to see the kids, and that part's fun for me. That's the one of the best parts about doing this job. You're one of 32 men in the world that get to do what we get to do, and you've done it, Boomer, and it's a blessing every day they get to do it.
Pete Carroll was my coach for the Jets, and then when he goes out to Seattle, the year that you were drafted, he was telling me that he and John Schneider were getting into a fight because he thought he was going to lose you in the draft.
Yeah.
And then you end up getting drafted. They signed Matt Flynn to that free agent contract. He was supposed to be the starter. And I remember calling out to Pete just to talk to him. And, you know, it was preseason. You had just arrived. And he goes, Boomer, my starting quarterback is the guy that we drafted. I'm just telling you right now, he's going to start from day one. I'm like, you gave all that money to Matt Flynn. He goes, yeah. I don't care. Yeah. Russell's our guy. Russell came in and you took over the locker room. And that's something that, you know, very few people are able to do at a young age the way that you did it with Seattle. The interesting thing is now you come here for the Giants, and you know what their numbers are. Their numbers have been horrible offensively the last couple of years, not in large part due to injuries. You know, I would say that was a big part of it. What is Brian Daboll expecting from you as the veteran leader of this team? What has he told you?
Well, I think the best thing that we can do is obviously, you know, give our defense a chance to really have a lead. You know, yeah. I think that's really important. I think with this pass rush and how these guys attack the quarterback, you know, we can get ahead early. You know, that's a big thing to win in football games. And I think that's an important part to it all. And you know, playing a four-quarter game, you know, I've been fortunate to win a lot of games in the fourth. I'm not afraid of being in those moments and having the ball in your hands and go win it. So
you know, the one that was that killed the Giants over the last few years has been turnovers.
Yep.
I mean, too many turnovers, too many interceptions, quarterback fumbles from the running back, drop passes, all the negative things. And I know you're new here, so you haven't been really a part of that. You actually took a team Pittsburgh to the playoffs last year. You did have success. I'm just wondering, like, how would you describe the way that you play on the field?
Well, I think that you want to be able to facilitate the ball to the right guy at the right time. I think the second part of it is that you want to be explosive on offense. And that doesn't just mean, you know, the deep moon balls everybody talks about. It's also the ability to get us in the right play in the right situation at the right time and to be able to facilitate that ball to that guy, and whether it's the run game or the pass game. I think also, too, that, you know, you want to be clutch. I think that's part of the quarterback position is the clutch gene you got to have, and you know, I think I definitely have it, you know, but you got to do it every time, and you got to step out there, and that's the part of the game that you love. You know, I remember Joe Girardi saying something, I'm paraphrasing here, but talking about Derek Jeter, and he said, you know, the thing that makes Derek Jeter so great in terms of playing baseball is that, one, he's consistent, but he's also consistently great at adjusting. And I think that you got to be able to adjust throughout the game, throughout the moments, and to be able to do it all.
You ever get mad?
Yeah, you definitely get mad.
I've never seen it, though. That's
mad.
The thing.
Like, yeah. I picture you being mad, like I don't know, like if you have a pet or something, and maybe they go to the bathroom inside as opposed to outside, and you see you going, dagnammit. You know, grabbing some paper towels and then just being over it in, like, 2 seconds. Like, you seem to me, and I don't know you, it's the first time I've ever met you, but you seem to be the most well-adjusted athlete.
I want to be neutral in my mindset. I know there's going to be highs. I know there's going to be lows. I don't want to be – you can't be a leader in being not knowing what they're going to get. And that could be either way. You could be pissed off, get leader all the time. Just be consistent with it. You could be upbeat leader, whatever, but be consistent with it. And I think that's what you got to know when guys, you know, approach you and you're approaching other guys. They got to know that you really care about them and how you go about it and all that. And I think that's where I try to bring the light in the room every day. I believe that, man, like I said, we got the best job in the world. Man, how could I, you know, but also at the same time, there's standards that we got to hit, and there's responsibilities, and there's execution, and there's focus. And my ability to switch on when I hit the white lines is I think, a gift, and to be able to do that in the midst of the moment. So I would say that, you know, I don't get pissed off, but I'm passionate, you know, so I'm a passionate player.
There's one more. I know you have to go in about a minute and a half now, but is there a perception of you from when you go into these new locker rooms that you have to fight against? What people think who you are, but you've never met them before, and you say, wait a second, that's not me. Whatever you saw, whatever you heard, whatever it is, this is me. Do you have to fight a perception of what people think of you when you come to these new teams?
I don't know. I just try to be myself, man.
Yeah.
I'm upbeat. I'm focused.
Yeah.
I love the game of football. I love people. I love winning.
That's pretty good. I like it.
I think I have that hanging in my house.
I was going to ask
that. I love winning. I love football.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about the realities of the sport. So here you are. You're on your fourth team. So, and I kind of went through that towards the end of my career. They drafted a young quarterback, Jackson Dart. Your impressions of him, and what do you think his future beholds?
Yeah, I think he's a super talented, you know, player, man. I think he's going to be really, really great.
He's like a funny kid.
Yeah. He's definitely funny. He's got a good personality. He's loose and all that, you know, and just in terms of his personality in a great way. And You know, he's got great arm talent, and you know, and hopefully I can help him in any way, you know. And
but you're not here. I mean, you're here to win football games for yourself. You're the leader of the team right now. Brian Daboll said you are the starter. You're the guy that's going to lead this team.
Yeah, of course. But I think what's important about leading a team is leading everybody. Mm-hmm. We don't, as leaders, we don't get to pick and choose who we lead. You know, if you're a leader, you lead all the time, and that's the responsibility. And you know, that's the gift that God's given me with the game. Is man, this is my 14th year. I'm excited about you know where I am. I feel amazing. You know, I feel confident. I'm running great, throwing great.
You don't have a lot of injuries. You've never really dealt with injury.
I've been very fortunate with that, and so
it's very smart. You've been very smart. Is what? No. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. He knows where the defense is. He knows where he's supposed to be. He knows how to get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it too is exactly. Get down.
Exactly.
You know, stay away from the big hits, but. You know, I also, you know, I think big part of it is just the training aspect of it all off season. It's a 365-day job, and getting prepared for that mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically is important.
Final question for me, real quick. The schedule, you know, we all look at it. We never know what the team is going to be like when you play that team. We never know what kind of condition your team's going to be in.
Yep.
But this is, on paper, the hardest schedule, and you got two opening games. And I don't know about you, but I used to look at that schedule and say, oh, my God, I can't believe I got to start in Washington. I got to go to Dallas. I mean, this is good. Right out of the gate, you guys are going to be tested.
Yeah, we get to.
Yes.
We get to. It's a mentality. It's you've got to try to beat everybody anyway. You know, why not start with the tough ones right away? You know, I think big part of it is you know, some people, they get the schedule and they start counting wins and losses.
But that's what we do for a living.
I think what you got to do is you got to count. You got to count today and let the days add up. And then when you look back at it and say, man, all those days added up to be something great, to give us a great chance to be successful on Sunday. And so that's what I'm looking forward to.
If you could go back in time and not hit post on Mr. Unlimited video, would you do it?
I would still do it, man. I got kids that unlimited,
I got it in person.
Yeah, but, you know, we're having fun, man. And I'm excited about this year. I'm excited about the opportunity that we have. It's going to be a great day today. The fans here have been, you know, what's been really fun is watching the fans here. You know,
they're starving for a winner. I know. This is a great franchise.
Yes, sir, it is.
And it has a history. And that history is really good under Bill Parcells and Phil Simms and all of those guys. And then, of course, Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning. And Brian has been trying to get that back.
Yeah.
And the thing that I appreciate the most about what the Giants have done for Brian Daboll is they stuck with him.
Yeah, he's a great coach. I mean, he's a phenomenal teacher. He understands the game. He's a champion. He's won before in different ways. And I think what's important for us is letting us try to be great, you know, and just believing that every day, having that mentality and approaching it that way.
How about a 3-2-1 unlimited for the three of us?
Sure.
Right? 3-2-1 unlimited. All right. Very good. Russ, thanks, man. Good luck this year. All right. Get some wins.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.